Hello there, I'm Nick Brownlee, on the telly.
Coming up in this episode of Nick Brownlee on the telly, Goggins the Ghoul stalks post-apocalypse Hollywood in Fallout, Loose Lips sink chicks in Capote versus the Swans, and there's murder in the air in Red Eye.
Now, when I was a lad and video games were in their infancy, it was a toss-up between Space Invaders and Galaxians as to which you became hopelessly addicted to. My drug of choice was Spaceys, and it took me years of rehab to kick the habit. That's why I don't trust myself to buy an Xbox. Video games are so good these days, it would be like having a crack dealer as a lodger. The bad news for reformed junkies like me, then, is that video games have now become the go-to source of material for TV studio bosses sniffing around for the next big thing to throw millions of dollars at. Last year, I made the mistake of watching the first 5 minutes of The Last of Us, a blockbuster series based on the best-selling game of the same name, which was broadcast on Sky Atlantic. 8 episodes later, I awoke shivering on a stained mattress in a seedy bedsit, having lost my job, my savings, and my family. More rehab ensued, and I thought I was clean, only for Fallout to drop on Amazon Prime. It's a blockbuster series based on the best-selling game of the same name, and at first I thought it was going to be all right, because episode one didn't do anything for me. But then I took another hit, and another, and 8 episodes later, well, in junkie speak, I'm jonesing for some more sugar. Like The Last of Us, Fallout is set in a post-apocalyptic hellscape in which a group of survivors, or players in the video game, must battle against all manner of mutants and weirdos to complete their mission. In The Last of Us, civilization was nixed by fungal spores. In Fallout, as the name suggests, it's all-out nuclear war, which has turned the planet into a radioactive wasteland. Episode 1 quickly sets the scene when an upwardly mobile children's party in the Hollywood Hills is abruptly curtailed by Los Angeles being nuked. We then jump forward 200 years to find what appears to be what's left of the human race living in a series of interconnected underground bunkers, a bit like they do in Silo, another blockbuster series, this time based on the best-selling novels of Hugh Howey. Except here, life in the bunkers is played out like a dystopian Little House on the Prairie, all mom's apple pie and no cussing, with a cast of dislikably wholesome characters led by the virginal Ella Purnell and her father Kyle MacLachlan discussing wedding plans beneath a vast Nebraskan sky. All is not as it seems, of course. The sky is beamed onto the wall by a film projector, for one thing, which is just as well, because anyone watching these early scenes could be forgiven for thinking they tuned into the wrong show. It's hard going, and the jarringly incongruous soundtrack of twanging bluegrass numbers doesn't help. But Ella's dream wedding to the hunk next door swiftly degenerates into an extended massacre, and soon enough, she's heading out into the wasteland in search of Kyle, who's been kidnapped. And it's here, beyond the hermetically sealed bunkers, that Fallout finally takes off. Don't get me wrong, this series is unashamedly and unrelentingly bonkers, with moments of gore-spattered ultra-violence untidily bolted on to moments of pure slapstick comedy, with a freak show cast of characters straight from the pages of 2000 AD. One for the kids there. Chief among them is the Ghoul, a noseless 200-year-old bounty hunter played with huge relish by Walton Goggins.
Well, now that is a very small drop in a very, very large bucket of drugs.
I followed Walton Goggins' career avidly for more than 20 years. I was fascinated initially by his name and by his teeth. But then I watched him play corrupt cop Shane Vendrell in The Shield and redneck thug Boyd Crowder in Justified and realised that he's probably the most riveting actor currently working on the telly. I can't wait to see him in the next series of White Lotus. As the Ghoul, and in flashback, pre-lapsarian scenes in which he plays the star of a cheesy 1950s-style westerns, it's Goggins who powers the underlying narrative of Fallout and stops the whole thing falling apart, which it quickly would if it relied solely on the main plot, which sees the main players, sorry, characters, vying for possession of a severed head and is so flimsy as to be invisible. As are the main players, sorry, characters, themselves. Ella Purnell's bunker dweller is too irritating to be the kick-ass Princess Leia she's clearly based on. Meanwhile, Aaron Moten, as the soldier who eventually comes to her rescue, is Han Solo, as played by C-3PO. Yet, at the end of the day, none of it really matters. Why? Because the billion-dollar success of video games like Fallout, the reason people really get addicted to them, is not because of their storylines, but because of the utterly immersive worlds they create. Showrunners Jonathan Nolan and Lisa Joy, the team behind the similarly bananas Westworld, know this all too well. And that's why they've spent the best part of what's reported to be $20 million an episode, ensuring that the world of Fallout is utterly immersive. No detail, whether it's the blasted ruins of LA or a mutant's third ear, has been spared. Even the closing credits are a work of art. As you watch them, you start jonesing for the next episode, not because you want to know what happens to the severed head, but because you're addicted to the world in which it exists. I urge you to watch it. Just be prepared to wake up on a stained mattress 8 episodes later, with your bank account emptied and your family long gone. With his bitchy flamboyance, cartoon voice, and psychopathic talent for self-destruction, Truman Capote wouldn't have looked out of place in Fallout. Instead, the celebrated American writer is the chief protagonist of Capote vs. the Swans on Disney Plus, although the show is about a Fallout of sorts. The Swans in question are a gaggle, is that the right word, of fabulously rich, middle-aged women at the heart of the New York social scene in the 1960s and 70s.
Ladies, mind if I sit down?
Oh, I wish you could, but we're being joined in just a second.
But there in the middle of them all is an ugly duckling, namely Capote, who likes nothing better than sharing indiscreet gossip with them over boozy lunches.
We're talking the governor's wildebeest wife, that fat-ankled Harry.
Yes!
They love him for it, and despite his reputation, think nothing of sharing their own secrets with him. Inevitably, the Truman Show comes back to bite them in the form of a scurrilous and thinly disguised expose in Esquire magazine. Horrified at the betrayal, the Swans circle the wagons and concoct an ice-cold dish of revenge. The first-rate cast includes Naomi Watts, Diane Lane, Chloe Sevigny, Calista Flockhart, Molly Ringwald, and Demi Moore. But while Tom Hollander is clearly having the time of his life as Capote, for my money it is fellow Brit Russell Tovey who steals the show as the writer's bit of violently rough trade. The full title of this 9-parter from Ryan Murphy is Feud, Capote vs. the Swans, because it's the second in the Feud franchise after 2017's Betty and Joan, which chronicled the epic rivalry between Betty Davis and Joan Crawford. And therein lies the problem. While Betty and Joan were proper A-listers whose falling out is part of Hollywood folklore, does anyone really care about a catfight between a washed-up writer and a bunch of tiresome New York socialites? Capote was truly monstrous, but he was primarily a self-regarding bore. Hollander gets him bang on, but by episode 2, those affected mannerisms will have you wishing for his premature demise, either self-inflicted through drink or courtesy of Tovey's fists. And finally, Red Eye, a 6-part thriller on ITV starring Richard Armitage as a doctor accused of murder in Beijing and Ling Juxi as the Chinese detective assigned to take him back to Beijing to face justice.
My name is Matthew Nolan. I am being extradited for a crime that I did not commit.
It's set primarily in long-haul business class, where pretty soon passengers and even a pet chihuahua start getting bumped off. Meanwhile, back in London, MI5 boss Leslie Sharp starts smelling a rat, and the detective's wannabe journalist sister starts digging into what she and all other TV journalists call the inside scoop. I won't bore you with the minutiae of the plot, because I'd probably fall into one of its many gaping holes and never get out. In any case, by episode 6, they seem to be making it up as they go along. If you're after a long-haul business-class thriller, I recommend Idris Elba's Hijack on Apple TV. By contrast, Red Eye is just a long haul.
You've been listening to Nick Brownlee on the Telly with me, Nick Brownlee. If you like what you've heard, why not watch the whole thing in searing ultra-high definition by checking out the Nick Brownlee on the Telly channel on YouTube. I'll be back soon with more of the same. Till then, happy viewing.
A Liquid Studios production.